Hello, this is Tyler McFeuters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, May 9th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, "He'll Be a Leo, a Lion for the Poor." Area priests surprised but delighted by Cardinal Prevost's selection as Pope. Story by Dave Hinton. The Reverend Patrick O'Neill never thought I'd live to see someone who was born in Chicago be a successor to St. Peter. Shortly after white smoke began to emerging from the Sistine Chapel came the Thursday announcement that Catholics near and far didn't see coming. Cardinal Robert Prevost, who will be known as Pope Leo XIV, had been selected to succeed Pope Francis. Never before in the Catholic Church's 2,000-year history had a pope been selected from the United States, let alone from Illinois. "I was certainly surprised," said O'Neill, who shepherds Catholic churches in Tolono, St. Patrick, and Ivesdale, St. Joseph. Even though he was born here, in a south suburb of Dalton, most of his adult ministry as a priest and bishop was spent overseas, mostly in Peru and later working in Rome. Like many Americans, he has many cosmopolitan views of the world. For those who think he might be some kind of house cat, so to say, for America, he'll be a Leo, a lion for the poor and those of the Southern Hemisphere. O'Neill believes Prevost will make a very good pope. The Reverend Michael Trummer said that while he was surprised at the election, he was delighted. "I think it's cool, something really special and unique," said Trummer, who pastors Catholic churches in Arcola, St. John the Baptist, Tuscola, 40 Martyrs, and Villa Grove, Sacred Heart. "There's something special about being from the same state that the Pope was in." Trummer said that he would have been happy if the new Pope were from Africa or Asia, just to experience something different. "But if he were to guess a country, I wouldn't have put the United States in the top 15. Monsignor Michael Bliss suspects Prevost's years spent in South America helped those cardinals who might have been hesitant to vote for an American. "It kind of distanced him from his homeland," Bliss said. "It kind of gave those cardinals some reassurance." Bliss leads churches in Monticello, St. Philomena, and Bement, St. Michael, and said, "Cardinals have been reluctant in the past to pick an American pope because I think America being the leader of the free world and having a superpower status, there would be a fear if an American is elected, among other things, now America controls the church." He said the late Cardinal Francis Eugene George, also a Chicago native, felt the same way. O'Neill, however, believes there's another reason for the historic reluctance to make a U.S.-born faith leader the Bishop of Rome and the head of the worldwide Catholic Church. "It wasn't until the early 20th century that the United States wasn't seen anymore as missionary territory," O'Neill said. "In terms of history of the church, we're a young church. You look at the church in the Middle East and the Church of Rome, there's 2,000 years. The Reverend Joel Phelps, who leads Catholic churches in Rantoul, St. Malachi, Thomasboro, St. Elizabeth, and Penfield, St. Lawrence, believes the relatively short time it took to elect the new pope showed the support Prevost had. "There was more consensus among the cardinals. The College of Cardinals is spread out geographically probably as wide as it's ever been," Phelps said, noting that Prevost's work the last few years as a cardinal prefect in the dicastery of bishops was likely a good thing for him. "He was there in charge of the process of the selection of new bishops. He's done that since January 2023," Phelps said. "That's what brought him to Rome. He doesn't know every bishop, but it gives him a broad base. He spent a lot of time in the international church." Phelps said a quick election of Prevost shows a sign of trust. O'Neill said Prevost has been a canon lawyer, a missionary, and like Pope Francis before him, a pastor. "He knows how to take care of souls," O'Neill said. Trummer said he is looking forward to learning more about the new Pope. I heard this announcement of his selection right in the middle of a couple of meetings, so I haven't had a chance to learn more about him, he said. I've prayed a lot for the election. I know it's got to be an extremely challenging task to be the Pope. Phelps is interested to see the first steps the new Pope takes and where he will put his focus. There's such a broad need in terms of the church throughout the world, Phelps said. Some of the major issues facing the church, according to Phelps, include internal matters involving its governance and communication. How to get all the people in the church to work well together. Externally, he said, the main challenge has been what it's always been. How do we portray who Christ is, proclaim Christ's saving power, and witness to that? There are circumstances both in the world and in the church that can make it difficult to proclaim the gospel. Next story is Illinois High Speed Railway Commission. High Speed Rail through CU? Take survey to voice support. Story by Jana Wiersema of Springfield. For a project that's all about speed, the effort to build a 220-mile-per-hour rail line from Chicago to St. Louis hasn't moved quickly. Discussions around the envisioned high-speed line, along with local lobbying to include a stop in Champaign-Urbana, have been going on for more than 15 years. However, local community leaders say a public input period that closes in a couple of days could influence where state officials decide to build the line and whether Champaign County is part of the route. We have one chance to do this right, said Champaign County Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Laura Weiss. It positions Illinois as a national leader in innovation infrastructure. High-speed rail in the I-57 corridor is Illinois' game-changer. The Illinois High-Speed Railway Commission, with assistance from the Illinois Department of Transportation, is conducting a feasibility study for high-speed rail from Chicago to St. Louis. State officials envision a line with speeds of up to 220 miles per hour, compared to Amtrak trains that currently reach up to 110 miles per hour on the existing corridor between the two cities. The project would call for dedicated rail lines powered by electricity that do not cross roads or other railroad tracks, officials said. The study will assess possible routes for potential ridership, public benefits, and costs. The study, in accordance with the commission, will propose a plan for a network linking St. Louis, Missouri, and Chicago, Illinois, integrating existing Amtrak and Metra services, and linking Rockford, Moline, Peoria, and Decatur, state officials said. Additionally, intercity bus services will be coordinated with the rail line. The legislation regarding the study specified a Chicago-St. Louis line and mentioned that the four other cities should be included through a feeder network that would connect to the high-speed line, said Janet Henderson with Images, Inc. The public relations firm is working with IDOT on communications for this project. These are just a few locations, she said. For the service to be successful, the network of feeder routes would be needed along the entire corridor. She added that while Champaign-Urbana was not listed in the legislation, that doesn't mean it's being excluded from consideration, and there is the potential for the community to be included on the route from Chicago to St. Louis. The commission is currently seeking feedback to gauge public interest in high-speed rail. To participate in a survey that will be open through Sunday, there are some websites, bit.ly/HSRStudySurvey or bit.ly/HSRStudySurveySpanish. To learn more or submit additional comments, go to ilhighspeedrail.org and click on Visit the Virtual Event Here. Both the survey and the public comment page include a place for respondents to enter their zip code, and Champaign Mayor Deb Finan urged local residents to do so. The survey is kind of, do you think high-speed rail is necessary? She added. But there's a spot to just leave a comment, and I would encourage people to leave a comment that says you're in favor of an alignment that would include Champaign-Urbana. Because really, if we can show that we have strong public support, I think that makes a difference to the state as they make these decisions. Finan, Weiss, and other community leaders with the Champaign County First Coalition traveled to Springfield on Thursday to lobby for this project and others. The coalition envisions a high-speed rail corridor that aligns with the path of Interstate 57. At the heart of this corridor is the University of Illinois, a global powerhouse in research, quantum computing, and innovation, Weiss said. Connecting it directly to Chicago via high-speed rail would create a real-time innovation pipeline, linking world-class researchers, entrepreneurs, and financial capital. Weiss noted that UIUC is one of 18 universities located along the corridor. It doesn't make any sense in my mind that we would have this type of investment at the state level and not include the home of the University of Illinois, Finan said. She also noted that a high-speed rail line would reduce carbon footprints and enable more efficient travel, with passengers able to get from Champaign to Chicago in under an hour. This would dramatically change how the two cities interact, she said. In an email encouraging local businesses to participate in the survey, the Chamber of Commerce pointed to potential benefits such as job creation, increased local spending, a stronger supply chain, and more accessible talent, markets, and capital. When asked if Champaign-Urbana might still see benefits if the community was left out of the route but fed into it using existing passenger rail lines and bus service, Finan replied that community leaders aren't conceding yet. We are standing on CU making the most sense, she said. Regardless of what route the state decides to pursue, it will likely be some time before these plans come to fruition. State officials estimated that the project timeline could include 1 to 3 years for the feasibility stage, 3 to 8 years for project planning and development, and 5 to 10 years for final design and construction. The feasibility study is a high-level look at if the project is even possible, Henderson said. It will include recommendations on a potential route. At the conclusion of this study, the High-Speed Railway Commission will review the findings and make a recommendation to the legislature on the next steps, she said. At this time, funding is not available for future phases. Henderson added that the next meeting on the study will likely be held in the fall and feature possible routes. Preliminary cost estimates will be included in the final report, she said. A 2013 feasibility study by UIUC and UIC on a high-speed rail line from Chicago to Champaign-Urbana to St. Louis and/or Indianapolis estimated a project cost of $22 billion to $50 billion, including $20 billion to $39 billion for portions of the line located in Illinois. Researchers recommended exploring a public-private partnership as a way to fund and complete the project. Express high-speed rail services from downtown Chicago to Champaign would take about 45 minutes, to Springfield about 1 hour 18 minutes, and to either downtown St. Louis or Indianapolis about 2 hours, the report stated. The study forecast that the high-speed rail system would create between 970 and 1,610 jobs per year in the Champaign area. Average fare at the Champaign station was expected to cost about $75 in 2025. Moving to national and world news. Trump administration. NOAA to stop tracking costs of weather-related disasters. Story by Alexa St. John of the Associated Press. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will no longer track the cost of climate change-fueled weather disasters, including floods, heat waves, wildfires, and more. It is the latest example of changes to the agency and the Trump administration limiting federal government resources on climate change. NOAA falls under the U.S. Department of Commerce and is tasked with daily weather forecasts, severe storm warnings, and climate monitoring. It is also parent to the National Weather Service. The agency said its National Centers for Environmental Information would no longer update its billion-dollar weather and climate disasters database beyond 2024, and that its information, going as far back as 1980, would be archived. For decades, it has tracked hundreds of major events across the country, including destructive hurricanes, hailstorms, droughts, and freezes that have totaled trillions of dollars in damage. The database uniquely pulls information from the Federal Emergency Management Agency's assistance data, insurance organizations, state agencies, and more to estimate overall losses from individual disasters. NOAA Communications Director Kim Doster said in a statement that the change was in alignment with evolving priorities, statutory mandates, and staffing changes. Scientists say these weather events are becoming increasingly more frequent, costly, and severe with climate change. Experts have attributed the growing intensity of recent debilitating heat, Hurricane Milton, the Southern California wildfires, and blasts of cold to climate change. Assessing the impact of weather events fueled by the planet's warming is key as insurance premiums hike, primarily in communities more prone to flooding, storms, and fires. Climate change has wrought havoc on the insurance agents industry, and homeowners are at risk of skyrocketing rates. One limitation is that the dataset estimated only the nation's most costly weather events. The information is generally seen as standardized and unduplicable given the agency's access to non-public data, and other private databases would be more limited in scope and likely not shared as widespread for proprietary reasons. Other datasets, however, also track death estimates from these disasters. Jeff Masters, a meteorologist for Yale Climate Connections, pointed to substitutes from insurance brokers and the International Disaster Database as alternative sources of information. Still, the NOAA database is the gold standard we use to evaluate the costs of extreme weather, Masters said, and it's a major loss since it comes at a time when we need to better understand how much climate change is increasing disaster losses. These moves also don't change the fact that these disasters are escalating year over year, Christina Dahl, Vice President of Science at nonprofit climate organization Climate Central. Extreme weather events that cause a lot of damage are one of the primary ways that the public sees that climate change is happening and is affecting people. It's critical that we highlight those events when they're happening, she added. All of these changes will make Americans less safe in the face of climate change. The move, reported Thursday by CNN, is yet another of President Donald Trump's efforts to remove references to climate change and the impact of greenhouse gas emissions on the weather from the federal government's lexicon and documents. Trump has instead prioritized allies in the polluting coal, oil, and gas industries, which studies say are linked or traced to climate change. The change also marks the administration's latest hit overall to the weather, ocean, and fisheries agencies. Next story is Trump administration. Air traffic control overhaul will cost lots of billions. Story by Josh Funk and John Sewer of the Associated Press. The Trump administration on Thursday proposed a multi-billion dollar overhaul of a U.S. air traffic control system that it said still relies on floppy disks and replacement parts found on eBay and has come under renewed scrutiny in the wake of recent deadly plane crashes and technical failures. The plan calls for six new air traffic control centers, along with an array of technology and communications upgrades at all of the nation's air traffic facilities over the next 3 or 4 years, said Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. We use radar from the 1970s, said Duffy, who compared the proposal with upgrading from a flip phone to a smartphone. This technology is 50 years old that our contract controllers use to scan the skies and keep airplanes separated from one another. How much it will all cost wasn't immediately revealed. Duffy said he'll work with Congress on the details. It's going to be billions, lots of billions, he said. The plan has an aggressive timeline, calling on everything to be finished by 2028, although Duffy said it may take another year. Demands to fix the aging system that handles more than 45,000 daily flights have increased since the mid-air collision in January between an Army helicopter and a commercial airliner that killed 67 people over Washington, D.C. Pentagon directive. Up to 1,000 transgender troops being moved out of U.S. military, out of Washington and the AP. The Pentagon will immediately begin moving as many as 1,000 openly identifying transgender service members out of the military and give others 30 days to self-identify under a new directive issued Thursday. Buoyed by Tuesday's Supreme Court decision allowing the Trump administration to enforce a ban on transgender individuals in the military, the Defense Department will begin going through medical records to identify others who haven't come forward. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who issued the latest memo, made his views clear after the court's decision. No more trans at DOD, Hegseth wrote in a post on X. Earlier in the day, before the court acted, Hegseth said that his department is leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns, he told a Special Operations Forces conference in Tampa. No more dudes in dresses. We're done with that S. Department officials have said it's difficult to determine exactly how many transgender service members there are, but medical records will show those who have been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, who show symptoms, or are being treated. Those troops would then be involuntarily forced out of the service, and no one with that diagnosis will be allowed to enlist. Gender dysphoria occurs when a person's biological sex does not match up with their gender identity. Officials have said that as of December 9, 2024, there were 4,240 troops diagnosed with gender dysphoria in the active duty, National Guard, and Reserve, but they acknowledge the number may be higher. Illinois Department of Transportation. End isn't near, but I-57, I-74 overpass ramp work expected to be finished this year, weather permitting. Story by Dave Hinton. Out of Champaign. Motorists wondering if the Interstates 57 and 74 overpass work will ever finish, take heart. There is hope. Ken Crawford, project implementation engineer with the Illinois Department of Transportation, said planners anticipate all of the ramps on the massive project will be completed this year and will be put in service, but he issued a caveat. His prediction is weather dependent. If Mother Nature cooperates, that phase of the work should be completed. Sometime in the middle of the year, we'll be done on I-57 and we'll do the staging work, Crawford said. We anticipate the ramps to be completed this year and all the new ramps will be in service by the end of the year. The new ramp from northbound I-57 to westbound I-74 in Champaign was opened Monday night. It is part of the ongoing reconstruction of the I-57-74 interchange. Additionally, the ramps from northbound I-57 to eastbound I-74 and from eastbound I-74 to Prospect Avenue were closed Monday night and will stay that way for about a month to facilitate connections to new pavement. Things are moving along, Crawford said. We switched to Stage 3, I-74 westbound last week, with the completion of the ramp carrying southbound I-57 to westbound I-74. When the ramp work is finished, the focus will turn to pavement work on I-57. We'll maintain two lanes in each direction at all times, Crawford said. As a result of that, it's going to take a little longer to complete. I'd say probably the middle of 2027 will be the I-57 completion. Landscaping work. One area most motorists rarely focus on during such projects is the amount of landscaping involved. Jason Smith, IDOT construction engineer, pulled up a file totaling more than 1,000 pages outlining the landscape work to be done in the area of the ramp project. There will be 9 different types of trees and 82 of each totaling 738, Smith said. I know there was a lot of tree removal on the project. We try to replace two for one. When we remove a tree, we like to replace it with two. Smith said crews try to stabilize areas that are complete. You'll see that there has been some seeding done and vegetation established, he said. Some of the seeding has been done at least temporarily. Additional I-74 work. Another project on I-74 is ongoing between Lincoln and Cunningham Avenues. IDOT is doing bridge rehabilitation over a creek near Urbana Country Club, as well as on a bridge that carries I-74 over Cunningham. We're maintaining two lanes in both directions, Crawford said. Work continues on I-57 overpass. Crawford said the westbound structure on I-72 has been completed. He anticipates pile driving to commence for new piers and new abutments next week. Since we have the westbound structure, there's a couple of ramps that can't be used, Crawford said. The detour for that is to continue to Olympian Drive and head back south. Ramps for northbound I-57 to westbound I-72 and westbound I-72 to southbound I-57 are not open. Once we complete the westbound structure, we'll be done for the season, and next year we'll switch traffic to the westbound side and complete the eastbound structure, Crawford said. US 45 work expected to begin. Interstate work isn't the only road project on the schedule. Crawford said bids were let for pavement work of a little more than 3 miles on US 45 from Springfield Avenue in Champaign to Curtis Road in Savoy. Work is expected to begin in mid-June. Most of the work, milling and resurfacing, will be done at night from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., Sundays through Thursdays. It's because there's high average daily counts in that area, Crawford said. If we close a lane, then traffic will be an issue. Urbana government. Mitten steps down as city administrator. Story by Jana Wiersema, out of Urbana. Carol Mitten has stepped down from her role as Urbana's city administrator. Mitten, who was hired in 2018 by former Mayor Diane Marlin, vacated the position on Saturday, city staff said. The city council will vote Monday on the appointment of human resources and finance director / CFO Elizabeth Hannon as interim city administrator until a new regular appointment is made, or until June 30, 2026, whichever comes first. Hannon is also up for reappointment in her current role for a term ending June 30, 2027. Mitten's departure came just a couple of days before new Mayor Deshaun Williams was sworn into office on May 5th. The agenda for the City Council's Monday meeting also includes several mayoral reappointments, including the reappointment of Larry D. Boone as police chief up until June 30, 2027. And we're going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of our News Gazette, dated Friday, May 9th, 2025. Please stay tuned.